In the mid-50s, two men knocked over a kerosene stove during a fight at a concert. After fleeing the blaze, the guitar player realized he left his beloved Gibson inside. B.B. King then ran in and saved it. He later learned that the fight was over a woman named Lucille, and ever since, his guitars have borne that name. You can find Lucille at the Hard Rock in Hollywood, Florida. Thousands of other priceless pieces of rock history can be found at Hard Rock cafes, casinos, and hotels around the world. To learn more, visit hardrock.com.
Little Steven's Underground Garage's coolest conversations, presented by Hard Rock Cafe, hosted by the Mighty Manfred.
This is the Mighty Manfred with your coolest conversations, presented by Hard Rock here in Little Steven's Underground Garage. Thanks for listening, and please remember to follow and subscribe, rate, and review. Shortly, I'll be speaking with Joe Grushecki. Back in the late 70s and early 80s, he came to prominence fronting the Iron City House Rockers. His latest album is called Can't Outrun a Memory, and it features our recent coolest song of the world, This Is Who We Are. I'll play a segment from it, and afterwards I'll be back with Joe for your coolest conversations presented by Hard Rock in Little Steven's Underground Garage. Mighty Manfred here with you in Little Steven's Underground Garage, and today I am chatting with singer, songwriter, musician Joe Grushecki. First came to prominence fronting Joe Grushecki and the Iron City House Rockers back in the late 70s and 80s. His new album out this summer is as Joe Grushecki and the House Rockers, and it's called Can't Outrun a Memory, and features our coolest song in the world this week, This Is Who We Are. Joe, how are you?
Great. I'm doing well.
Good to be chatting with you again. You know, we spoke... it was about 4 years ago. You were celebrating the 40th anniversary of your Iron City House Rockers album, Have a Good Time But Get Out Alive. And now you've got a new full-length under the belt, your first since 2017's More Yesterdays Than Tomorrows. How does it feel having a new long player out?
Oh, man, it's great. I mean, we started this record before the pandemic. Then we took a little break on it to do... Have a Good Time But Get Out Alive, and then the pandemic kicked in, and we took some more time out to do an American Babylon reissue, and I started writing the album in 19. Mm-hmm. And we started recording, I don't know, maybe a couple years later, just because of the pandemic and everything. So yeah, it feels really good to get a new record out. We worked hard on this one, and we're very, very pleased with the way it turned out.
You know, we're going to drill down on it in a second, but first I was curious. I remember you being a special ed teacher. Are you still working as a teacher actively?
I just retired. This is my second September where I didn't have to go back to school in quite a while. So, it was time. Time to do something else.
You've been a teacher for a long while, all through your music career, coinciding, right?
Right, on and off. I was a special ed teacher. My specialty was working with you know, the very needy kids, anywhere from intellectually disabled to, you know, behavior problems to learning disabilities to autistic, you know, on the autistic spectrum, and just everything. I just worked with, you know, a wide variety of special needs populations. Started when I got out of college and continued pretty much, I want to say on and off, but pretty much on until last year.
Wow. You know, that's got to be so intense and I know rewarding, but at the same time you finish a day like that, it just seems like you can be so exhausted and then having to put putting your effort into creative stuff afterwards. That must have been challenging at times.
Well, it was, but somehow, you know, my love of music was so strong that I found a way to make it happen. And, you know, I just love playing and I love recording. You know, I've been blessed to be able to write all these years. And, you know, I always had a band going on in my head. And, you know, I just found a way to be able to do it and still support my family and, you know, work a very challenging job at the same time. I don't know how I did it sometimes, but here I am on the other side now.
But the skill set that you had to develop over the years without as a profession, I have to think it would help dealing with guys in bands, you know?
Well, yeah, it definitely, it's like herding cats, both of them, you know?
So. Right. You know, on the new album, you got a tune called Living in Coal Country. And I read that you were born in Pittsburgh, but you were actually raised in a coal town outside of Pittsburgh or not?
Yeah, I was raised in a little town called Biddle that was all immigrants that were brought over from two countries, Serbians and Italians, to work the mines. And my family on both sides, all my uncles and dad and grandfathers, were all coal miners. My dad actually started a coal mine when he's 12 years old. So, yeah, I grew up in that culture.
Yeah, and how was his health?
Well, he ended up at 90, 89. He made it to 89. He did have a black lung, but somehow he never held him back. And he was World War II vet, Purple Heart recipient. You know, everybody in my family, you know, served in the service. I'm a Gold Star family. My one uncle, my namesake, was killed in World War II. Just the town I grew up in, you know, it was a very small town. Everybody was in the service, and everybody were coal miners until my generation.
What theater did your father serve in?
My dad served in World War II infantry, 4th Infantry.
And was he in Europe, or did he go to the Pacific?
Europe. Yeah, he was in Europe. D-Day. He had 5 campaign medals. He saw a lot of action.
You mentioned having you know, uncles and so forth. And I was reading that you had an uncle who was into rockabilly music. And was he like kind of a gateway to exposing you to rock and roll stuff?
Yeah, absolutely. My family was very musical. My dad played professionally before World War II. And he was like a jack all trades. He could play everything from accordion to saxophone to stand up bass to guitar to fiddle. He played, his music of choice was country and western, the old time country and western. You know, Jimmy Rogers, he idolized Hank Williams, George Jones, that kind of stuff. And he also played swing music. And my mother, she was into ethnic music, what they call the tambourines here in Pittsburgh. And she sang and danced. And my uncle, who was a 50s guy, you know, I used to, he had this ritual of him combing his hair in the mirror. And I could still, he had one of his little record players, and it was like, looked like a little box with one spindle on it, played 45s. And I to this day, I remember the, you know, you had Heartbreak Hotel, Elvis, A Whole Lot of Shaking, Jerry Lee, Speedo by the Cadillacs, The Great Pretender by, you know, the Platters, that type of stuff. And it played over and over and over again. And Man, once I heard that, I was hooked. I was a little kid, but you know, I've always been into rock and roll since then.
Well, two things here. So how well your parents, were they obviously talking about this sort of music in the household and the music in their lives, were they into rock and roll, or was that
No, not really. No, that wasn't their generation. You know, they came from the swing generation. My dad was real, like, you know, he was old time country. Like I said, Jimmy Rogers was a big influence on him. Play some bluegrass, you know, that type of stuff. T for Texas, T for Tennessee.
Yeah, well, you mentioned country and western, so I figured it was both kinds of music there.
Well, you know, it can't help but rubbing off on you. You know, in Pittsburgh, you know, we got that little twang that people think we're Southern sometimes anyway. So I don't know whether it was instilled by country music or not, but I was lucky to grow up in a very, very rich musical culture. And AM radio played, you know, all the hits, the Motown, the Stax, the Beatles, the Stones. And there was a whole series of AM stations that were, every little town had an AM station, and they would play the most obscure rhythm and blues, rock and roll that you could ever hear. And I would try to explain it to people, but, you know, like talking about Spencer Davis Group, Give Me Some Lovin' was the hit. All the AMs, the big AM stations were playing. The small AM stations were playing High Time Baby. You know, it took me years to find that online, but that's the type of stuff they would play. You know, they played the heck out of Hanky Panky by Tommy James and the Shondells till it became a national hit. They played it way after the song was cut. And they had these teen nightclubs where you'd go and hear all this music. You would never hear top 40 in the teen clubs, but they would bring in all these acts like Mitch Ryder and the Detroit Wheels, the Sam the Sham and the Pharaohs, Wilson Pickett, Junior Walker and the All-Stars, Sam and Dave, Smokey, you know, Bo Diddley. So all those acts close up and personal when I just had was learning how to play guitar. So, you know, it was quite a musical upbringing when I was a kid. So I was very lucky.
Well, two things here. You mentioned you're starting to play guitar. And the other thing was you mentioned the Beatles on the radio. So is that the Ed Sullivan? Did you see the Ed Sullivan thing? The Beatles are on Ed Sullivan?
Yeah. They're life-changing. Yeah. But we won't be talking today, right?
Right. Well, that's, you know, for the, that's not, you know, it's anybody that was, you know, of an impressionable age in that decade, they saw that. Then, if they're still doing music now, that was an epiphany, right?
Oh my God, yeah. And what really sealed the deal for me were the Stones, because Pittsburgh was a real rhythm and blues, dirty rock and roll song songs that they played here on the radio, this AM alternative. I guess it was alternative in those days, but you know, every little town had an AM station to play this stuff. And the Stones were closer to what I was hearing on radio. And you know, the Beatles, when you started out, the Beatles had a lot of complicated chords. And you know, the Stones, you had three chords, man. You mastered that, you're on your way. So
when did you first see the Stones? You heard them on the air, no doubt, on the radio, but do you recall when you first saw a concert of theirs?
Yeah, they had the single was All Over Now. That was when I saw them at the arena. They had graduated to the arena already at that point. And, you know, it's one of the Dick Clark Caravan, the Stars, Paul Revere and the Raiders, you know, with the great Mark Lindsay and the Birds, Simon and Garfunkel. Actually, I saw Simon and Garfunkel in these teen clubs when Sounds of Silence came out, and they were literally booed off the stage because they weren't funky enough for the crowd there.
Wow. Well, when did you start playing guitar?
The day after I saw the Beatles.
Okay. All right. That's
there was one in the house. I picked it up and, you know, started. That was it, man.
Well, we'd spoken before about your the Brick Alley Band, the Iron City Days, and the critical acclaim you received back then. So I want us to focus on the new album, Can't Outrun a Memory. You mentioned that's some of that dates back to 2019. The material though, but the actual recording, well, when did you start recording the tracks?
Towards the end of the pandemic. I mean, we were dabbling around. I was, you know, always like to record demos and, you know, just to hear what I've been writing sounds like. And, you know, we might have made one attempt to start on it, and then the pandemic hit and we put it on the back burner. And then we started really focusing in on it after the pandemic, which was what, 2022, I believe, or 21 and 22, we did most of recording.
So the notes that I was given says it was produced by yourself along with, and you'll have to help me with the pronunciations here, Rick
Wachowski, and my son did it. I didn't produce on this one. It's Johnny Grushecki, yeah.
Okay, and who is Brian Coleman?
Brian Coleman's our long-time sound man. He's been our sound man for 30 years.
Okay, and Rick, who is Rick?
Rick is my longtime producer. He played in a band called Crack the Sky. And he's, you know, we've been working together since 92 on stuff. So, you know, he's a tremendous musician, and he's one of those guys, you know, he's able to translate my musical ideas quickly and efficiently, and maybe sometimes explain them better to other guys than I can.
Well, the new album features our coolest song in the world this week, This Is Who We Are. It's the album's opening track. And that opening riff makes me think of that Gene Clark Bird song, I'll Feel a Whole Lot Better.
Well, yeah, and Day Tripper.
And Day Tripper, all right. So that's...
Is it Day Tripper? No, not Day Tripper. No, Ticket to Ride.
Well, when did you write that tune?
That was one of the first ones I wrote. You know, probably 2020, something like that.
Yeah. And what was the inspiration there?
It was just where I was at the particular time. I sat down. It was one of those songs that, when you write, sometimes you get a gift and they just sort of appear.
Yeah.
And that was one of them.
So that came together pretty quick for you then?
Yeah, yeah. It was a no sweat song there. To, you know, it just popped into my head and boom, it was done. You know, I did a quick home recording of it and just, you know, saved it until it was time to record.
Oh, excellent. Well, the first single off the album here in 68, and my understanding is that in that year you did some traveling, exploring. Can you tell us about your 1968?
Well, yeah. Initially, after I was done with high school, my father really stressed the importance of an education because he was denied any schooling due to his circumstances. He went into the mines and worked full-time in the mines after sixth grade, at 12 years.
You said he was 12.
12, yep. 12 years old. So he loved to read. He was very aware of what was going on in the world, a champion of human rights and the little guy insisted that I get an education. So I went to a school in Pennsylvania that was called California State College. I should have known something was up then because it was California, Pennsylvania, right? And it was literally, you know, I thought I was going to go to a an atmosphere where people were hip and playing music and long hair. And instead, it was sort of like going backwards in time. So I went to school, and I was not allowed to have a instrument in my room and or a record player in the dorm. So I literally was not playing for almost a year and a half. At the end of one summer, I moved to Atlantic City to spend a summer in Atlantic City. And this, you know, it was the 1968, and the music was changing. You know, it was no longer the 3-minute song. It was Cream and Hendrix and all that stuff. And I bought my first Telecaster there. I really wanted to be a a part of the whole thing. And so I never stopped after that. And so the whole record is sort of a story of, you know, I was involved in a tragic car accident in 68 down at the shore. And I just made up my mind I was going to never lose track of who I was again and keep playing. And, you know, I was missing an essential part of my being by not playing music. And so the record starts in 1968 and takes us, you know, through those years up to the present day, which is this is who we are. So it's sort of a musical journey of my life from 1968 to the present.
Well, let me ask you then about Can Outrun a Memory. I mean, first I should set it up with that. I always enjoy your lyrics in terms of phrase. And the line in there, can't escape what's meant to be and you can't outrun a memory. So I guess in your case, what's meant to be your pursuit of music?
Yes.
And what memory are you trying to outrun?
Well, the memory of this particular song is about a tragic accident I was in. We were hit by a drunk driver, and the young lady I was with lost her life. So, and you know, I kept that memory buried for years, and it just started coming out, not in a bad way, but started thinking about that particular time in my life, and you know what everything meant. And, you know, how it affected me and my life and the people around me and, you know, how important music became, and it became like almost a lifesaver. So that's what the record's about without being morbid about it. It's just me coming to grips with those particular time in my life.
You got the track on there, Who's Fooling Who? It seems to address some of the environmental changes going on around us. How hot has it been in Pittsburgh this year?
Very hot. Pittsburgh is not noted for its hot, sunny days, but this year, you know, there was almost drought conditions at a couple spots, but you know, I know people were doing outdoor gigs that were getting them canceled, you know, moving indoors or canceling them altogether because it was so hot and dry. And you know, Pittsburgh is the Three Rivers, so there's always flooding here. And it's just, you know, I just think it's, you know, as a concerned citizen and a citizen of not only Pittsburgh, but of the world, you know, it's something, you know, we have to do a better job of. Preserving our planet.
The guys playing with you in the House Rockers, they're all on the new album?
Yes, it's a complete band record.
Okay, and you mentioned your son Johnny producing. He's also playing in the band.
Johnny plays. Yep, he on this record he produced it. He played acoustic guitar, electric guitar, and he sings. But both he and Brian Coleman, who was our sound man, like I said before, had a huge, huge part in shaping the sound of this record.
And who the other guys in the band is Jafo.
Jafo, yeah, he's been playing with me since 1984.
And he's the drummer.
He's the drummer. Jeffrey Jafo Simmons. Danny Gochner is a guitar player. And just probably the best guitar players I ever played with. And
Jeff Garrison on bass.
Jeff Garrison is the bass player. Yeah. Really solid, melodic bass player.
And on the tune, Across the Bridge, you got this really cool organ at the song start. Who's playing the organ there?
That's Jeff Levine, who is, he plays with us when we come to Jersey a lot. And, he's our go-to guy when we need keyboards on anything.
Well, that's a cool track too. I love the backing vocals.
Backing vocals, the two local girls, yep, Stevie Wellen and Melinda Calese.
Melinda Calese, yeah, that tune's too. It's got the has got this kind of cool gospel thing.
Yeah, yeah.
Thing going on.
It's sort of like, you know, old time gospel, maybe a little Dylan-ish, maybe with the organ.
So, do you guys have any shows upcoming?
Yeah, we just did a series of shows this summer. We're probably going to start booking for the you know, hopefully the late winter and early next year. We'll be at the Light of Day coming up. We have a big reunion show with the. We're bringing the Iron City House Rockers and the new band. You're going to do a big show at a place called the Craft House here on December 28th. We're going to do both bands. My current band, we're going to warm up for the Iron City House Rockers, which is a bit of an iconic Pittsburgh institution at this place. This place we're performing is big enough for both of us. So we're going to do that. We did it last year and we had so much fun. We decided to do it again this year.
Oh, excellent. So I was looking all different stuff up and, I have to apologize because I wasn't aware that you had this documentary back around 2007, A Good Life. You're going to do a part two anytime soon? We get an epilogue?
Well, I'm probably ready for one. You know, it's been a while. But you know what else we have? I have a play called East Carson Street.
Well, wait. You have a play?
A play, yes.
A play. So you came up with the... You wrote the play?
Well, a gentleman, John Rosenberg, is a playwright from San Diego, California, was a fan of mine, and he took 20 of my songs and fashioned it into a musical. And it's a story of a Pittsburgh family. It's not my story. It's a story of a family could be from anywhere, but this particular one happens to be from Pittsburgh. And it's a story of... two generations of Pittsburgh family. You know, the first half of the play is about being a youngster, you know, and all the finding your place in life and, you know, your mate and your girlfriend. And the second half is adulting, you know, when everybody's grown up and have kids that are grown also. 20 some of my songs. It was directed by Daniel Kuttner, who's a Broadway director and producer. He worked at Harold Prince's office for 17 years. And Prince is like, you know, the man on Broadway. You know, produced and directed everything from the original West Side Story to, you know, to Vita and all the. In the major hits that I knew, he was part of. And Constantine Morales was the lead when we put it on New Jersey, and Till Wicks was the female lead. We had a really great band, you know, all Jersey Shore and studio musicians. It was just a really almost overwhelming experience for me. Sitting in the audience and watching people sing 20 some of my songs and you know, just, you know, females and, you know, giving a different perspective to some of the songs. So it was really a thrilling experience. So it ran for a couple weeks in New Jersey, and we're looking to bring it to Pittsburgh early next year. Called East Carson Street, which was the title track of one of my records. I always tell people it's my song. It's my love letter to Pittsburgh, but it's very cool. Very cool. You know, it's not like a sappy, you know, people breaking into songs that don't make any sense for, you know, but John and, a play producer and actor here from Pittsburgh, Patrick Jordan, helped fashion a play, and really used my lyrics to drive the story forward. So it was very, very satisfying.
So, and you said it ran to the Jersey Shore for a couple of weeks, going to bring it to Pittsburgh.
Well, it actually ran in, yeah, it ran up like towards Red Bank.
Okay. All right.
Bellworks Theater.
And what was the time frame for it beginning in Pittsburgh?
Well, we're not quite sure yet. We're trying to hope to get it nailed down in the next couple of weeks, but we're planning to bring it to Pittsburgh with the, you know, with the ultimate design to take it to New York.
Well, right. It needs to be on the Great White Way.
Right.
Right.
New York needs this play, people.
What's that?
I said New York needs this play, ladies and gentlemen.
It does. The world, the country needs this play.
Right.
Needs this play. All right, well, right now we can give a spin to another tune off of Can't Outrun a Memory, and I'd like us to hear Until I See You Again. Can you set that up for us?
Well, you know, this is another one that's looking back, and it about going to college, the friends I made in college who have all gone to the next plane. They've all, you know, all passed away, but it's my three of my best friends. And, you know, this is another one of those songs that just sort of came to me. I mean, I had my antennas out for these songs, and I was lucky enough to, none of them were that painful, actually. You know, most of them just happened. The ones that I really had to work on and spend a lot of time just didn't seem to make the record, you know, but these were all sort of natural. But it's about my friends and I when we were young, in college. You know, we went to the Florida Keys, spent a winter in the Florida Keys, and it's a story about friendship, saluting that friendship, an appreciation of our friends and loved ones.
Well, Joe, thank you so much for joining me today on our Coolest Conversations.
Hey, Manfred. We also, you know, we just signed to Omnivar Records. So this is on Omnivar. I don't know if you're familiar with them or not.
Well, no. I mean, it, at first I saw that it was on Omnivar, and I thought, I wonder what that is. Isn't that something?
Yeah, they got some really cool, they do mostly reissues. In fact, they did a house rocker anthology, 36 songs.
But they weren't involved. They weren't involved in the reissue of
Have a Good Time. No.
Yeah, yeah.
That was Steve Popovich Jr. That was Steve Popovich, okay. Was the original head honcho for Cleveland International, the Meatloaf,
right,
label. He's the guy who signed us originally.
Right. I remember when we were talking about that before, and somehow going out to party at his house. There was some story about that.
Yep. Yeah. Knocked on the door, and there was Ronnie Spector in a fluorescent purple bikini, almost fainted.
Yes. Oh, my goodness. Well,
my goodness is right.
Yeah. Okay. Well, we're going to give a listen now to Joe Grushecki and the House Rockers, Until I See You Again, here in Little Steven's Underground Garage. From Joe Grushecki and the House Rockers, that was some of the track Until I See You Again. That tune is on their latest album, Can't Outrun a Memory, on Omnivar Records. This is the Mighty Manfred, and thanks again to Joe for chatting with me today on our Coolest Conversations. Thanks also to Sammy Semenza for producing, and Kurt Baker for editing. Australia's Dom Mariani He's a favorite of ours here in the Underground Garage. He's a creative force behind a number of groups based there in Perth, including Datura 4, DM3, and the Majestic Kelp. His first band, though, to gain notoriety was The Stems. They've got a new single out, and Dom will join me next time around to tell us all about it. That's Dom Mariani on our next Coolest Conversations, presented by Hard Rock, here in Little Stephen's Underground Garage.
Buddy, you're a boy. Make a big noise playing in the street. I'm gonna be a big man someday. You got mud on your face, you big disgrace. Kicking your can all over the place.
Some things are better when they rock. The Seminole Hard Rock Hotels and Casinos rock around the clock with nonstop casino action, rooms fit for the king, pools, spas, restaurants, and clubs for every taste and temptation. Seminole Hard Rock Hotel and Casino in Tampa or Hollywood, Florida. We will rock you.